Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about... This is a podcast for April Apricot, a teacher in South Australia, 1,000 kilometres from here in the Blue Mountains, and I'm going to ship her, possibly in the next day, the first of a new generation of social robot lessons, teacher assistants. Now, what she'll receive, it'll be a plastic box, a see-through box, and plug it in, and we'll be able to have a few interactions with it. So this is just the very first test stage in a long generation, perhaps a number of years before we have fully functioning social robots to replace short-circuit teachers and their ignorance in the way they teach science. And we'll get these social robots will save our students from the ignorance which has been carried on generation, intergenerational ignorance brought about it. So it's a fairly complex thing to talk about. So I'm going to give a general gist about what you'll expect, how it'll be unpacked. There'll be a longer end to the podcast, and you're welcome to stop listening. I'm going to sort of get an introduction in the very start about sort of why I'm podcasting, why it's the best, and why I'm doing it, and the whole why. And you can hear a school bell in the background, so we're just a short distance from another New South Wales primary school. Now, it's one of the things that some people have commented that although it's a low-quality podcast, it's actually a voice memo. It's actually best if you're doing something like making a cup of coffee or cooking a dinner or doing something useful while listening to this in the background, and you can stop and say, oh, I want to listen to that again. There's a lot of guff there. So that's one of the things that's been discovered, along with the publication. So I've just got a little dictaphone here, shotgun microphone, and I just stick it into my computer. I've written the software and it just publishes it very easy, and it's not the best for everybody. And then on the receiving end, there's also technology you need to do, like sort of fold washing or dig the garden. I don't know what you do, or go for a walk the dog while listening to it. So there's that aspect of it. And so what I've said is I'm going to describe the little robot unit sent to you, and some larger sort of the organisation involved in it, some lessons for kids to do with history and RSL and with the universe, and I'll go into it. It'll be actually perhaps a long podcast. The long podcast is the thing I'll focus on, as lead me into why am I doing long podcasts, where I have to memorise people's names like April Apricot, where they live in South Australia, the process, the structure. It's part of the general rehab that I'm doing from slowly getting over sort of cognitive knockback. There's a certain amount of aspect that you get in from the MRI scan, seeing what's awry, behavioural stuff, a bit from the psychologist, a bit from the education department, saying, oh, look, you're dreadful and stuff like that. And you just have to take it all together and keep on pushing ahead. And as you pass barriers, sort of remember to say things or get things done, you realise there's no one's holding, there's no finish line saying, right, you can get back to normal. You just have to keep on pushing and pushing. So today I did a whole series of three mini podcasts on Australia, just simply reading the Wikipedia article on Australia and just popping it up, just after a process of going through just hours and hours effort. And I'll have to rebalance and get some more physical activity in with it. Now, unfortunately, because of my feeble podcasting thing, I can't walk and podcast, and that probably with the worst podcast. So that's the general gist of why I'm podcasting. Now, the first thing we'll have to get into is the package and how it works, and then we'll explain the organisation. If I explain the organisation and all what's going on ahead, it'll be too hard to follow. So the little package, I should have also explained a little step further back. With the heart operation, I've got a a little mechanical part, which means that I've got blood thinners, so I can't machine anything. So I've had to, in building this, I've had to at the same time work out a way of building something which doesn't use knives and things like that. Okay, so what you'll receive by courier, please, I'll get your address, then I'll print out your address from my printer, stick it on a box, and then a courier will come to my front desk, pick up my box, and put it, the box from my front porch onto your front porch or your school, wherever you nominate. And I've got to buy this box and put in some wrappers, and I hope it goes. And so the actual structure of this is your initial test phase, so we can find out really early on whether these boxes can be shipped. Now, I should explain further down the track, these boxes are not going to be your standard boxes. They'll have GPS and wireless to identify where they are and position themselves and communicate with the wireless system. But also, they'll they may even have 4G or whatever it is to communicate with the network system, so they'll be alive. They'll also have this new type of electronic paper. It's not new, but it's sort of, we haven't seen it around in Australia. So you can imagine a shipping label with two wires at the back of it. It's a bit like a Kindle is the closest thing you have to it. So it's called electronic paper. And on that, you can actually print the shipping information, even the logo and colours to be used by your company to ship it. And so at a particular point in time, the box maybe will be report that it's overused, it's finished being used, and it will be it will then issue a command, possibly a verbal command, take me to the front office, and a courier will magically come up to it and pick up the box and take it away and put it in a new position. It's already done. So that part of the technology is already done. And as you can imagine, the idea is that these boxes connected to the internet have scientific expertise. Basically, a bunch of scientists can get in and bypass the teachers and actually teach correct science to the kids. So that's the end aim for it. And so now I'll just describe the box. So there's three clear document boxes. And fortunately, I found out that you can actually weld the boxes together, and they'll be welded together. And and cut out, and you can all cut this out with a soldering iron. You don't have to use a scalpel. I did use a scalpel initially. It's a stupid thing. I'm going to be ultra safe. I'm going to hold it here, and flick the scalpel blade, flipped out of the holder, cut my hand, and it bled a whole day. This is with the warfarin to do it, so that's out. So I've had to devise a manufacturing method for these boxes. Now, I should say, what's the idea of the manufacturing method of the boxes? Obviously, there's going to be objections by the education department, so the only way this can happen is if I make it simpler enough that people can order it, get on Facebook, order the box, assemble it, but you know, the circuitry and the scientific input can be downloaded into it. But basically, a 14-year-old or an excited, I don't know, 20-year-old studying a for, say, a gaming degree or something like that at university, can put these boxes together and bypass the entire education system. So you can have your community a bit frustrated, and so-and-so says, I know, I've got a son, a daughter who's interested in it. They can just order it online and follow these instructions, and it's all safe. Like, I've had to make it safe to build it. And so it's this rigorous thing, and it's all see-through, so you can not only see the science experiment, you can see the circuitry and stuff like that. For this one, it's going to have a plug-in. The other ones have a battery pack. So as it said, I'm and you would have seen the robot documentary on me. It's no blart, no bothers in terms of when faced with just enormous arrogance and stuff like that, you say, oh, well, I might survive, and I've got to rehab, I've got to really push for these long-term goals. So I've pushed for these long-term goals, and I've built this first prototype. So the three prototypes I've built, there's this one, which is a kiddie's introduction to electromagnetism. It is fun. Another one, which I'm sort of suspended working on, is equivalent to, Batman. Batman has a utility belt where there's a crisis, there's something to pull out. It's a utility belt of quite literally 50 high-grade scientific sensors, which are possibly a cut above what you will see in a science laboratory. They are really top-notch sensors because there's software there which makes it good. It absolutely blows away anything ever available at school. So 0.1 degree accuracy, 10 sensors, scales, mass, flows, automatic titration, light sensors. Basically, this is the second one. I'm still working on it. And I've sort of suspended working on it at the moment because I have to pause because I just don't have the space and resources and stable places to do it. And also the cognitive push over the top of, for me, so let's go back. I'll just do the third one here. And the third one is, there's another lunch bell. The third one here is a fabled Einstein pendulum, quantum oscillator, something way, way ahead of stuff. And essentially, I had a huge cognitive rehab stuff ahead of me. And it was hard. The first couple of months was really hard. I had to relearn electronics. And the great thing about building something is that if it doesn't work, it tells you it's not working. So you don't need, because you don't have support, you don't need that support person to tell you it's not working. And if you can't find something, it's a problem that you can't find it. And you go, and you forget that you can't find it, and you go back, and then you. It's a long, hard road, but a lot of it came together. And so, in fact, this dark, which I'll talk to you about, is actually built out of the R&D test components to build these other units. So these other units, you just can't go off and say, "All right, I'm going to build that." You have to go through a process of prototyping, which is a concept prototype, a research prototype, and the production prototype. So you've got a production prototype made out of components which are left over. So in order to test what a device you want to put in, the final one, you have to build another device which is sufficiently large to test the whole range around to pick out which is the best way to go. So this particular one is a box. It has a plug you plug in. It doesn't have the batteries in it. It doesn't have any U-boot. It doesn't have GPS. It doesn't have anything with it. It's got just the basics of it. It does have a solenoid, which I used from the third prototype of there. And it's got the robot control from the third prototype. Now it's in the first prototype. It's in the center there. And then I just had primary school kids come along and various things. And firstly, the primary school, say two aspects. The primary school kids came along and they said, they found it was extremely fun because you put the magnet in the center of the solenoid. The magnetic field flips back and forth all the time. It's to do with another experiment. And it makes the magnet flip around violently in the inside. Then by and by, can I get a duck to do it? So as I asked things, I put a duck inside it. And then once the duck was in there, the duck is dancing. It's two things. It's what music is it's listening to. I can't sort of make it up. And so I made it such that when you press a... as you can gather, this is just a very light... Well, it's a lightweight, but a strong thing. A lightweight thing for just kids to play around, have a bit of fun, not do much on it. They press a contact... they put their thumb over or finger over a piece of aluminium foil. They can see through the lid. That changes the capacitance and switches on the robot. And the controller. The controller then sends pulses across, and then as they were wanting to music, I've added a fairly feeble buzzer. I didn't add a speaker or anything like that to make it a loud thing, just very low key, all proof of principle. And then where is their dance floor, looked up, and then I put in a glowing dance floor underneath. All there's this glowing paper, basically. It's sort of a metal sheet, and you can place it underneath, and that lasts years and years. But it's a glowing thing. It's all unusual, and the entire thing is to keep on putting the most advanced technology in front of students early on, and bypassing I don't necessarily say primary school teachers are scientifically ignorant, but definitely the teachers above them who think they know science definitely are, no question about that. They are completely ignorant, and they lord it over the other people, saying, look, we understand science, I wish you could teach science as best as I could, and they're doing a dreadful job, quite frankly. But they don't project that. They project confidence, because it's all about confidence and stuff like that. And unfortunately, the end result, the people who really lose out of this are the students at the end of the day. So this will go. You'll receive the box, open it up, plug it in, put your finger on the piece of alifoil. The little piece of Doctor Who music will play. Why did I do Doctor Who music? Just because it was stupid. And it fell in, and each note, the field reverses and the duck waddles and dances in it. It also has a little nest, so it can sit on the nest and put its egg in, and the egg can dance. So the egg's not in egg form. I've sort of left it there. And the idea is that I ship it to you. You plug it in, it works, and then you may play around with the kids if you want to, may not. You make your own decision. Ship it back, and it's passed one of the tests along the way. And there's sort of a parallel thing to do before I get on to the organisations and stuff like that. A parallel thing to it, and that is children's books, where I'm really not interested in the story too much. I'm interested in creating basically the psychology tension, the child tension, attention, and having played with the attention, I've resolved it using science rather than a behavioural moral that I add to something. Sort of like, I don't know, you've got the fox and the grapes and I don't know, the gingerbread house and all these things, and they've got some moral about feeling sad, and then trusting your parents, not trusting your parents, and all these things, Little Red Riding Hood, all that type of stuff. It's that a lot of the morals go into a man saves me, or authority saves me, or I should go against authority. Rather than this, these stories are I've solved it by science. There's a little plane going overhead at the moment. So that's the thing, and so you will have picked up in the package I've sent you so far a couple of children's books, and that's the actual story behind it. The actual story of, like, there's Baby's First Elements. Oh, how inappropriate about that. You must not teach elements to babies, which is sort of just such a fantastic thing to find out. What is all that about? What's not teaching science to babies? Is there a dome that in which we don't introduce science to babies? What is it? How is it? Is it being tested? Have we done a double blind test? Do we know what's going on? So this is why some of those books are going on. And in their packages, a book from 1920, which is my grandfather's textbook on this very same topic, and we do have a test. This has led, that teaching this way has led to perhaps Australia's greatest computer programmers, greatest discoveries has left by doing this, whereas you look at the other side of the ledger, it hasn't happened. So I'm sort of continuing the experiment on that one. So the package will arrive. it'll be very obvious. And you can, it's a document holder, so you can unclick the top and put your hand in and play with it. And if it breaks, it breaks. We just ship it back, and it'll be no expense to you. At a particular point in time when you say it's all finished, I will email you the shipping label with the instructions of where to put it. You'll affix it to the box and place the box on your front desk, on your porch, or wherever you've specified. Leave it there, and within 6 hour time zone, so if you said 7, they'll definitely become before midday, whatever it is, or just after midday, they'll take it. It will disappear. You'll have nothing to worry. You don't have to go to a post box or anything like that. So this is all part of the modern economy coming forward. So let's talk a little bit about structuring organisations. Obviously, the one group historically who have not been able to deliver modern science and advanced science is the education department. That's proven. What they have been able to do is provide a complex Byzantine infrastructure where people who go in and smoke in mirrors and have friends in things, and it's all complicated and stuff like that. And you know, case in point, I'm outside it. But as a scientist, I've come in and said, "Oh, what's the mission? We've got to get our students, in fact, students right across the human race, away from folklore, folk science, and in fact, a lot of what you are going to do, that duck represents an electron." And that the science of the electrons go totally different from what's taught at school. What 12 years of education, just by missing a few critical steps at the start, go dreadfully awry. And then those years of education invest another 3 or 4 years to de-educate someone. And we don't de-educate everyone. Some people turn off and saying, "I don't believe you, I'm going to go and teach rubbish to schools." Some other people who don't do that become scientists and go across and learn quantum physics. Okay, so the alternative system, which is just in the infancy, is set up, is called the Glenbrook Advanced Concept Institute, GACI. And I have a few directors, and they've operate on completely different reverse principles for enterprise, making money, everything else like that. It's to look at the talent which is available, branding that, listening to it, manipulating it in a way which focuses on working not talent as something that you spray onto something, but an actual living organism. So you don't have a problem and you just throw talent at it. You just actually, this is actually looks after the overall talent and interrelationships. Looks at networks, and then also that's the main thing, is to look at networks, but not, you know, the typical retiree people are dreadful at individual networking. You would, the last people you'd ever speak to longly, you'd try and be nice to them and get out of the room and stuff like that. That's well understood. And so it's to try and look at what, given that's happened, what do you do next? And so there's certain things I'll go across it. And the other thing is that reverse process of, rather than starting off saying, "I'm a little part and let me listen to where I'm being told from the overall system," we generate huge programs. And with the programs, we've got different projects. And we can't do the projects. However, we can do little sections of the projects. And this is one little section of a project to go forward. And a program being, the general program objective is to get us out of this educational rut where we teach incorrect things to kids. Now, that being said, that's one principle, but coming back, GACI, the symbol of them is everyone wears dark sunglasses. and there's no restriction. Anyone can be a member of GACI within reason. Anyone who wants to be has obviously got the qualifications to be in it. And there's a theme song, "The Future Is So Light, I Got to Wear Shades." I haven't really played it through. And most of my time is actually supporting and working through their problems. So I haven't, I don't know whether, as an organisation, it's all that that good. But at least GACI, the institute, is where the shipping components for this ship together got assembled, demonstrated, discussed, and you will receive it, you know, some GACI information. So there's a few various things there. So that's the, so what I've covered so far is the you know, podcasting, you know, stumbling around, left it by yourself in terms of basically it's education department, we don't want you anymore, off to the wreckers yard. And I've sort of been in the wreckers yard working up and said, oh shoot, I might weld, do a bit of self-welding here and stuff like that. And you know, hours and hours of podcasting and fighting and circuit building and planning and stuff like that. Always been positive, positive going forward. There's that bit. Then we've described the actual apparatus which you will receive. There is no worries. The only thing you have to do is two things. You have to, or three things. You have to open it up, plug it in, and put your finger on the bit of silver foil, and the duck should dance. That's it. And then, if you want to show it to your kids, good. Otherwise, send it back. That's it. So, then we've covered the very briefly this organisation, and there's fantastic people, which, you know, I'm still working with. There's a beautiful winemaker and beautiful, beautiful old scientists. Very hard to get them using technology quite the way you want to. We're moving across here. Now we're going to discuss some of this is perhaps the boring or brain twisting part of the podcast. I've sort of discussed the approach of writing children's stories where you put things in, and there's other approaches where, given problems, we've decided, oh, how do we do it? How do we do it involving school kids and stuff like that? So the first one I want to talk about, there's two things I'll talk about. One is Gallipoli, strangely RSL, Gallipoli. And the second one was about teaching the universe or the galaxy at preschool, at school, primary school. There's a major thing for it. So how did Gallipoli come up? Well, part of the general story is, your employer's not doing the right thing, they should be doing this, this and this, you'll have to go out and volunteer to organisations so at least you've got some social interaction. So, yes, and as you would know from South Australian times with Tim, not to talk about Tim too much, Australian Adelaide University Regiment. But that's gone on. Overall, I've spent 15 years tacking around those things. I think Tim came a lieutenant, and I just couldn't stand officers and stuff like that. However, that's meant that I've been put into the RSL, and everything I suggest, if I can do something, if I can stack chairs, it's okay. But any alternative is, if it's just... Because I think the RSL is about... painting tradition forward by actually taking the tradition that was a few years ago and actually tiling it in front. It's sort of like trying to walk forward by a road by actually ripping up the road behind you to put it in front of you. And so there's no things. So one of the things I wanted to do is with basically drones and stuff like that. This is up the top of the agenda. Drones, to get a whole series of drones to go up, go to a school and set out the Gallipoli battlefield, and then the students will walk through it. And there was, and as you would know from the documentaries, yeah, I can do that sort of thing. I can program drones, a fleet of drones up to set up a battlefield to scale and move up. And, oh no, we don't think we want to do that. No. Okay. And so the overall story is, how do you do Gallipoli, and how do you to educate stuff? And the main thing to do is to reduce the size. So the entire length of the World War One battlefield was at most 2 kilometres. Now, if you divide 2 kilometres by 10, you get 200 metres. If you divide it by 10th scale, you can fit it inside a school oval. Or if you divide it by 100, you can fit it inside a classroom. This much. It's amazing. And then, so this is the idea of scales. And this scale idea is something which is very important in terms of education, getting through. And scale is a very fundamental idea in terms of your Barbies or Lego figurines. Gee whiz, the name is forgetting me. This is, I'm so hard trying to think. I really hope you've watched Lego Masters and the Lego Movie. Oh, I've wondered what those figurines are. They're set scale. And so toy playing and childhood is got a real sense of scale. And so scale is a great thing to go across. So you set up the battlefield. And this sounds awful. But I want you to just go through it really quickly. Set it up at 1/10 or 1/100, and then you set it up. It's 9 months, a minute a month, if you want to. Right, so it's a classroom activity. So you can see how quickly things go on as within the expansion time. Then you also add in the factor that your class divided up. They can be Australian or Turkish. And you draw lots to just get across the idea that history's happening, and it's really a luck of the draw which side you're on. You know, how you turn out to be that person. It's actually not your belief. It's the fact that you, as a person, has been plopped on that side with that lottery ticket. And this is what's happened, and to go through it. And I wanted that for Anzac Day. And school... Great. But then I went to a Catholic school, and yes. Oh, I want to. Oh, can we have meetings with so-and-so? We're too busy. They didn't say we're too busy, but essentially it was. It became really hard work to contact them across. So we just know it's a long track across there. But I just wanted to flag that and put that as a thought bubble in your head that they're across the country. So often these problems have their solution finders spread across in different positions. So if you go around in yourself and you find that no one in your square kilometre has your district has, and there are people who have got control agendas and things going on, it's going to close down. Well, you can step back and you can say, well, you can draw two conclusions. You can draw a conclusion that it is absolutely impossible. Everyone's a bastard. They're all against me. Or that perhaps if I look at all of Australia and all time, I may be able to find someone, or I may be able to find an intermediary who can get me to that next step. Because sure as hell, we're going to take the Australian kids. We're not going to leave them behind. We're not going to leave them behind with what we've got now. We're going to push them ahead, and it's up to us to think, push through, no matter what the obstacles are put in. And so this is the rehab stuff. I shouldn't say the obstacles, massive set of obstacles, but just push in day by day. Like I improve by 0.001% a day, but yeah, day after day, pushing ahead. And similarly here. So we've got the scale stuff there. So if you can imagine 9 months of Gallipoli, 2 kilometres, 20 metres, 9 minutes, and you're quick. Not to make it funny, but it has to be prototyped, push it forward, and include people. And there's various history things from the historical society, similar to that. That is where we have an ancient photograph, and the kids just dress up as the photograph, and imagine what happens next. And then after they've done that, the history is explained for that piece of local history. Okay, going across the last thing as we go across, and this is thankfully just a half hour, podcast. And this is putting the universe, or putting the galaxy down on Earth and breaking down the barriers. So there are certain things that, certain directions that education has gone along, and it's been the fundamentally the wrong, cognitively, the wrong way to do. So the idea is that the universe is really big. Things are so large, you can't imagine how far things are apart. And that's because I realise that an average kid has a cognitive working memory of 5 units, and I say, well, look, there's 26. You expand 26 by 10 by the time you 10 times you think, and you go, oh, that's impossibly big. But there, it's a way they've done, and they've sort of become in love with the idea that the universe is too, the galaxy is too big to understand. And when they're on a roll, they also muck up atomic physics as well. It's just a nightmare. Here comes the idea is that you need a basic scale, and that's 1 to 1 trillion. So that 1 meter equals 1 trillion meters. So a basketball, which is 1 meter, or so an exercise ball, which is 1 meter across, equivalent, if you blew it up to real life, it'll be 1 trillion times bigger. Now, 1 to 1 trillion is a great scale because at that stage, the sun becomes the size of one of those cashews or little ball bearings, the cashews on top of a cupcake. There's going to be two stories to this, a fun story at the end. And in that, if it's that size, so you imagine the sun, you imagine you're holding the sun in your hand, and at that scale, the nearest, now, unfortunately, I've decided that the sun's location on Earth is going to be in Glenbrook. The nearest sun is, I've just got to work it out, it's 40 kilometres away, fair distance away, and that nearest sun is the size of a grain of sand. And between there, here and there, everything is an empty space. Now, just plotting across, I've created a roadmap, and that is 1 kilometre equals 1 PM. It's a capital PM, kilometre, and a petameter. Peter, it's called a petameter. Isn't that great, a petameter? And there's certain definite scales of the universe. I have to go back in it. But this overall scale means that the entire surface of the planet turns into a classroom. That is, I define a classroom the size of the planet Earth, the surface Earth. And so it turns out that there's a fantastic little star in my professor's old Melbourne University professor's room, and it's called Alpha Hydra, Hydrus. Okay, and it's an interesting star anyway. It can be seen in the southern sky, and that's where it is. And you can go and visit it. So, if you imagine a scale model of the sun, and you're the one that, and I'll find out the sun, which is closest a star closest to your classroom, if you want to go along this pathway. Now, just a small aside, because I've got a few seconds. The Hydra. Hydrus and Hydra. There is only one constellation. Well, it's Hydrus and Hydra are the most unusual constellations in the sky. Hydra is the female water snake, and it is the longest, not the largest, the longest constellation. It starts up near Orion. This is the person with the sword and the shields and the belt and the Big Dipper and that type of stuff, and it goes all the way down to the southern hemisphere out of sight. So it's this line of stars the ancients thought, and in Greek mythology they thought it was the story of when someone when I think Apollo was sleeping, a drunken person got into this chariot and said, look, you're just not old enough to drive that chariot. And the chariot went out of control, and this drunken path is going across. In terms of everything else is static, but this is the most fantastic thing. And then other civilizations have said, in general, it's a water snake. It's a long snake. It's going over the horizon. Then what happened is that the Dutch went into the southern hemisphere and saw it end in another little circle of stars, small circle of stars. And this Dutch astronomer had, I think, got shipwrecked in Madagascar. Nothing better to do, look up at the stars, up down, and there's Hydra, the female, and Hydrus, the male snake. Male snake is the diminutive, coiled up, frightened snake. And this is not within a joke. You can look this up. And Alpha Hydrus is this, for some reason, the second brightest but very easy to spot star. So that's sort of a story which is really good. So we've got all this beautiful story, and every classroom can have a star, or city at least can have a star. And that's set up with the central star here in Glenbrook, Australia. And initially there was great enthusiasm from the United States. Oh, yeah, good. Oh, no, well, no, the central star has to be in Australia, it has to be in the US, you know, it must be Washington, D.C. or something like that, I don't know, rather than that like that. So people got very enthusiastic for a very brief while, and then I suppose I was a bit stroke heavy at this point in time, but, you know, communications is not my my aim. So that's great. That's one thing that we'll discuss. So just going back, you've got the duck arriving, the seed idea of Gallipoli, fighting Gallipoli, and also holding a star from the universe in your classroom, the star from galaxy in the classroom. Great thing about this is 1 to 1,000 scale molecule is this 1 to 1,000, 1 to 1 trillion scale is that if... You know, how big would be the entire galaxy at this shrunk at this scale? It so happens that the entire galaxy would fit side to side inside the Sun. That's lovely. The galaxy is so vast that you're thinking about it, you know, distances here on Earth, distances, but it would fit inside the Sun. It's this amazing, amazing, amazing story. But we're going to finish this off with a school activity that I want to talk to, which is called Pancake Galaxies. Now, again, using scale and also understanding that this is one thing that schools do to aplomb. They do it badly, and then they test, can people unthink what they've taught them? And that's what they're testing. They don't test whether they understand it. They actually test in a complex way. Are you smart enough to unthink the errors that I have taught you? Okay. So in this one is a scale. Is that 1 millimeter equals 1,000 light years? So it's sort of a mix. The one that I've talked before is purely metric. This is a mix between almost... a light year is almost an imperial sort of guffy type of stupid unit, but 1,000 light years. So the galaxy is 100,000 light years side to side, bulging 30,000 light years in the middle, and we're 50,000 light years across. There's the Monty Python song from The Meaning of Life, which as good Catholics you probably haven't looked at. So what you can do is you can make a pancake. Serve the kids pancakes, and this is a fantastic lesson. A pancake that's 10 millimeters across, so it's a smallish pancake. Or depends if they're high school students, they love making their own pancakes. In the center, you put the galactic bulge. Now, in the centre of the bulge, you put a piece of chocolate in the centre of that. That's the black hole. Then you put popping candy in to represent the supernova going inside your head, your thing. And then get them to eat. However, the way the distance is a bit of social distancing here. It's roughly, I think it's 2.5 million light years between our galaxy and Andromeda. This is the other Andromeda. And Andromeda, even at that distance, is about the size of half your little finger in the sky, if you hold your finger out and stuff like that. There's a really rather an interesting thing where in army you're taught to judge angles by holding your thumb out. And so I was teaching them that, and the kids were getting me, "What's that do? Sir, what's that?" And of course, I was doing the Eshe, the street fighting, Sydney street fighting symbols that, they all knew. I didn't know and found out. But they looked at it, and then they saw it was suddenly, oh, then they saw Apollo 13, where, I've forgotten the actor's name, this horrible person. I won't bore you. He did in Toy Story, Woody, and in Castaway, what's his name? Cannot think of his name. This is the brain stuff going, and I'm really trying all the time. This is why talking helps. But he held his thumb up, and they could suddenly see that, oh, that is indeed what scientists do, hold their thumb up to get the angles. But it means that when you have a pancake, the next person has a pancake, and it's 2.5 meters away and gives you the size. And I think at that size, that scale, I think it's 700 kilometers. The universe edges at 700 kilometers across. And indeed, this is, again, another area which is not described properly, the actual universe geometry. But we'll get into it. And the great thing is that they eat it and they say, oh, I can feel like popping candy, stuff like that. And what's happened is, again, this has been missed by the education department. The Americans have put these large microphones, basically like that. There's one in one part of America, another part of America, and a third microphone in Italy. And these microphones are so sensitive that they can hear gravity waves, and you can feel the popping candy in your mouth. We can actually see that popping now. Since, I think, 2012, it was the most... I think it was... I don't know when the first gravity wave was. I think... because I remember reading it before going into operation, so it's 2017, very recently. It wouldn't have been 2012. I would have been just had complete kittens if I was still at school, and it came across. And so the discovery of gravity waves is that we can now see hear with a directional microphone where these things are blowing up, and we've heard a particular type of blow up, and we've got our satellites, our robotic telescopes. So the telescopes no longer have humans involved. Well, they do, but not really. No one. There would be no one who would type something in that would go. They are going at high speed. They can high speed go, and so they heard this plong. So they actually. So black holes going up sound. With no change of frequency, they go whoop, 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 and then and it's that tremor. They can feel the tremor, and they can tell the size of the stars going in. They do it truly. So it's very, very quiet. And if you amplify that and get rid of all the noise, it goes whoop. And there's a spectacular story of how it's found. But what happened is that they most recently heard of, that's unusual, satellites, all the telescopes on Earth skewed to this area. They picked it up and they watched a huge amount of gold being made. There's no gold in this part of the universe, this part of the galaxy, or it's a distant galaxy. Nope. And suddenly... there was a huge signature of a huge amount of gold made, which is really interesting. It sort of made the periodic table come alive. Okay, well, that's 49 minutes. So let's do a summary, and I'm doing a summary because that's part of what you do in Toastmasters. And I go to sit to Toastmasters. Are you interested in speaking? No, I'm just interested in listening and working out what you have to do. Let's do a summary. We started off introducing April Apricot, talking about and the fact that you're going to receive a package. Before I went too much further, I said, oh, look, I'm doing podcasting for cognitive rehab so I can actually adjust without notes, take in a complex piece of information. Given that I've got no one necessarily to speak to, I can actually organise speaking and stuff like that. Part of this thing, and I've been doing 2,000 podcasts, 2,500 podcasts, just pushing hour by hour, just trying to improve like that. Then I describe the actual package that you will receive and how it's going to be no effort. In fact, it's part of a much bigger plan down the track to use artificial intelligence, social robots, to absolutely come in over the top of this and actually just, you know, have the music playing somewhere else where people just walk away from these people who are learning from textbooks misunderstood by their teachers and then passed on to go across. So this box will be the first across, and it, giving part of the context of it. There's another school bell at the background. Then after that, I described, well, that's done. I described the actual GACI, this organisation, which I'm trying to do. Given that the organisation structure cannot deliver the next generation stuff, what are we going to do about it? Then after that, I said, well, there's other things which we looked at, and this is some really earthy things, like Gallipoli, Australian history. How can we actually translate that to our kids in a way that they can remember and understand and put it across? Then after that, given that we're looking at scales, can we actually do a full-scale thing and turn our classroom into, rather than expand a classroom to square walls, can we expand it to the surface of the earth and on the surface of the earth place scale models 1 to a trillion, make the surface of the earth a 1 to a trillion scale model there? And remarkably, that's gone very, very slowly here, partly because the people that I'm speaking with, they actually don't believe in the Big Bang, nor do they believe in space. And that's, for me, you know, just throw it at me. We'll keep on working out. I've got a little bit of difficulty. I've got one group of people who don't believe in the moon landing. This is seriously. But I didn't think that could top it. There's some people who don't believe in the Big Bang. Gave me a big book to read through it. What did I think? And then I just read through and said, oh, this, you know, this is out of date. This has been disproven. And what they said is critical. That would be necessary. Has that been proven? It's all been proven. And then, look, these conspiracy theories, they're pretty virulent, that type of stuff. So that's sort of closed up there, but it can still go ahead. Then even if that can't go ahead, you can at least do a astronomy pancake making where you can actually start to teach modern dramatic astrophysics. So that's the story. April, I hope you've enjoyed this. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.